The task of the preacher in the Christian church is pretty clear. It's to bring the gospel, the good news, to their hearers. As I was reminded this last week, you don't especially need good advice from people like me on a Sunday morning. You need to hear good news. For some, preaching can slip into moralism. You know, this "you should do this" kind of thing, which may occasionally bring some short-term change, but it's not really a substitute for the gospel, because it's an encounter with the good news of Jesus Christ that actually transforms us, that will change us. The Vancouver-based and now retired, but still occasional teacher of preachers, Daryl Johnson, someone whom both Diane and I have been influenced by, he has claimed that, and I quote, "People in any era, in any part of the world, are dying for the news of what God does." And then he adds, "Every text has such news." Every biblical text? Okay, so where's the gospel? Where's the good news in today's reading? I mean, it's quite a contrast, isn't it? This gospel begins with angels singing peace on earth around Jesus' birth. But here we have Jesus himself saying, "I came to bring fire to the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled." And then just a little after that, he says, "Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division." So what's the good news there? As some of you already know, Tevis and I were blessed by just having a visit from some relatives from the United Kingdom. Now, we don't get too many of them coming out this way, so it was really special for us. My cousin Kath and her husband Tim and their two girls, Layla and Nina, who are 11 and 9, I should say, respectively, they hail from Manchester. And never having been to Canada before, they flew to Calgary. And then in the comfort of a motorhome, they journeyed west and they got to see the Rockies and some of the interior of BC and, of course, Vancouver, the west coast of Vancouver Island, and, of course, the high point of any North American trip. A trip to Coombs, and of course, Qualicum Beach. And it was really, really neat to get their impressions of this part of the country. And it reminded me of what an amazing place it is in which we get to live. And mountains and lakes and woodlands and wildlife and the coastal waters. The sheer expanse of our country. I don't honestly think I take those features for granted, but I do confess that sometimes I misplace the wonder which should rightly accompany this part of the world that we call home. And the forests, they really are incredible, aren't they? Now, when I've been to the United Kingdom and on the continent, I find that I'm blown away by the age of things, you know, buildings and towns and cathedrals and sites of historical happenings going back thousands of years. And so I find myself marveling how we are immersed in history. And when the Relleys were with us here, we did the mandatory trip to Cathedral Grove. And you've got to, right? It's in the rule book. And I was reminded that history surrounds us too. An 800-year-old tree is pretty impressive in any country. And while that ancient history is harder for us to access, the first peoples have been around this part of the world as long as my Druidic ancestors were creating those mysterious stone circles back in Britain. But speaking of forests, the issue of forest management and forest fires came up a number of times in our wide-ranging conversations with my family. I just want you to know that many of the world's greatest problems were solved in our patio late in the evening. It was very impressive. My cousins were well aware of some of the recent challenges that we've had here in previous summers with forest fires. The Fort McMurray fire, for example, was very much news on the other side of the Atlantic. And that brought up the conundrum that we have here, that the fires are a natural and integral part of the life cycle of a forest. We had one here 350 years ago in Cathedral Grove, as I was reminded last week. fires recycle nutrients into the soil, they get rid of pests, they create canopy gaps that lead to new growth, and of course, sometimes the fire even helps some species of trees reproduce. But our practice of putting them out adds to the buildup of fuel for further fires, and so in some ways we need fires, but the places we live and our livelihoods can be threatened by them. And add to that this growing concern about climate change, there's something of a vicious cycle here, because a warmer climate creates a higher likelihood of fires, and fires contribute to greater greenhouse gas production, and yes, that apparently adds to global warming, and it's all connected and complicated and hard to sort out. What's not complicated is how powerful fire is. Watching the movements of a forest fire, if you've ever seen that, or a brush fire, or a house fire, it's a kind of sobering thing. I mean, for one thing, you're never even sure if it's actually out. They suddenly flare up again, or they continue to burn, hidden away, sometimes underground, smoldering out of sight for years and years. There's a wildness and an unpredictability that can make fire terrifying, which is why Jesus' statement is so jarring, it's so alarming. I came to bring fire to the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. How I wish it was blazing right now. I mean, that's, I think, an attention grabber. I mean, whatever happened to the Prince of Peace, you know, the love your enemy and go another mile and turn the other cheek and be gentle as doves. What happened? Jesus is heading towards Jerusalem to an important engagement on Golgotha, just in the near future. And throughout this section of Luke's gospel, knowing that this important hour is approaching, knowing that his time is limited, Jesus is preparing his people for what's going to come. And he's urging them to be ready. As we've noted in the weeks preceding this one, it's a section that's filled with difficult sayings as Jesus teaches hard lessons to the people around him. And our passage today is no different. Now, it's actually easier to see on the printed page, but you may have heard in that reading that Wanda shared with us, Luke's ordered the account so that there are three parts in it. The first section is how what Jesus is revealing, how his work, his mission, will cause division, even to the point of dividing families, which would be truly shocking to his hearers, because family was very much the central social unit in that time and place. I mean, surviving without family was, in that culture, extremely difficult. You needed family to survive. In the second portion, he calls on his hearers to pay attention to the signs of the times. So this is not an unfamiliar topic for Jesus. And he's indicating that something's about to happen, so get ready. And then in the third piece, he's rather mysteriously calling his hearers to make sure that their accounts are in order, that they're settled. And that's not literally about finances. In fact, it's about getting right with God. And so each of those three sections deserves a sermon of their own. And don't worry, I'm not going to preach three sermons today. I'm just going to confine my thoughts on that first part this morning, division. Now, in the biblical story, when fire is mentioned, it's used typically in the context of being a symbol of God's move to cleanse or to discipline somehow. But in Jesus' usage on this particular day, while it does contain an element of those things, I think it's being used in a slightly different way. I mean, is he prophesying destruction and judgment? To some extent, I think he is, but he's doing so to indicate that there's a move forward happening. And the gospel that he's declaring has such power that it will actually be like a fire. It'll have the effect of a fire in that it will consume. And for his disciples, for those who embrace Jesus' news and follow his way, well, they're going to be perceived by some of those around them as dangerous. Just like a fire can be dangerous. To the point where it will divide important relationships. I think it's safe to say that this is a much different kind of focus on the family approach that Jesus is offering than the way that term gets used today. And so you can see that this means that there's a significant price to such a discipleship. It may actually cost you family and friends. Note that it's not so much that his people will be abandoning family and friends, but instead there's the real possibility that the families just might not want to be connected with such extremists, viewing them as enemies even. And so they might actually walk away from Jesus' people, from those who claim that Jesus is Lord of their lives, of our lives. On the other hand, as his followers, the call to love our enemies remains, so we're not walking away from them, but just don't be surprised at rejection. I find this to be fairly strong stuff. If you're like me, it's a bit difficult to hear and take in, because family is so important to me. And I find myself coming back to that question, where's the good news in this passage? How can division be good news? As I said, it was great to have my relatives visit with us. It was wonderful getting their impressions of this place. And having also just returned home from some traveling abroad, I found myself reflecting on living here in Canada. Now, just to be clear, I think Provence is a pretty fine place. We really love going there. And I never, ever leave the United Kingdom without some sense of melancholy. Because England is my place of birth, and most of my family remains there, and I still have some connection and affection for that particular nation. But I was thinking this week of how fortunate I am to live where we get to live. I mean, this is a pretty fine country. It's not without some flaws. But nonetheless, it's a place of opportunity. It is a place of great beauty. And it's possible to live a really good life here. If there's a downside to living in the tremendous freedom of a prosperous liberal democracy like ours, I have a hunch that it might be, ironically, that we have so much. That is, for many of us, as a result of the lottery of life, where we just happened to be born, or in my case, where my parents brought me when I was a young child, well, it's easy to take for granted the gift that we have. And yes, sometimes I worry that my settled and predictable life, and don't get me wrong, I think it's a pretty fine one that I get to enjoy, but I worry that it's well matched by a settled and predictable religion. I'm not sure there are too many people in Qualicum Beach who view St. Stephen's as threatening the social order. And with respect, I've not seen too many signs that our denomination is perceived much differently by the shrinking number of average Canadians who are even where we exist. We're not exactly perceived as a fire to the earth, are we? But then again, I'm reminded that God loves us so much that God's not prepared to leave us as we are, even in relatively safe, stable places like Canada. In Qualicum Beach. And if you pay some attention to what's going on inside of you, what you thought was maybe heartburn, well, it might be the fire that Jesus promised. Not threatened. Promised. See, you might just be catching fire. Pay attention to that irritation that comes up from somewhere. Irritation or even anger when you suddenly notice that something's not right. And it's often in front of us for quite a while before we notice it. It's what some have called a holy discontent. You have a concern for people who are isolated without support of family and friends, who just kind of disappear into the community and who are all horribly alone. You notice that there are people who can't find simple housing that can be afforded. You see kids growing up without something approaching a stable family. And so and they're heading off into this most difficult and tumultuous life. And it's all readily predictable, even before their first day in kindergarten. Species are just disappearing. The insight that having more stuff just doesn't seem to be satisfying isn't touching the emptiness inside of us or in the people around us. That moment when you realize that your definition of a successful life is not carrying the freight of that life. You keep seeing the aged or the infirm, those who for all sorts of reasons just don't understand where to begin. Those without an advocate being unable to plug themselves into the healthcare system that they really need and that we're so proud of. Something's failing somewhere. And there's much, much more in front of us, but seemingly just a little out of sight. And there's a list that's surprisingly long for such a fine place as this. You see it? It's like something begins to smolder within you. It's like there's a fire in there, a discontent, sometimes even an anger. And that fire is actually good news. It's gospel. That disturbing fire may actually lead to some division with those who don't see. But that fire might also be a sign that God is changing us, bringing us into and employing us in God's plan to grow the kingdom. That underground fire that began in the Galilean countryside some 2,000 years ago, a fire that the power thought they put out on that Friday afternoon, but a fire that's continued to smolder, so often out of sight, but still burning, still drawing disciples, still changing the world. And I'm thinking that might be good news. Thanks be to God. Amen.